You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Wait on a Friday. Mike McNamara with you. I am joined by Michael Musselman. He's rolling around. I just saw a picture of him with a cowboy hat on. What's up, Tex?
Huh?
I said, "What's up, Tex? How's it going?" Now you're a cowboy. now that you're a cowboy, man. Nice. What's up with you rolling around with your cowboy hat on? That looks a little weird to me.
Well, you say that and you live in California?
That's right. You got a problem with that?
A hat is weird for you to see in California. I mean, you can see anything.
Okay, but
you can see a raccoon on someone's head.
Okay.
It'd be okay, right?
Right, but I don't expect to see a cowboy hat on your head. I expect to see you in a pair of flip-flops, a pair of shorts, a T-shirt, and some sunglasses. That's what I expect to you. That's what I expect to see. And then what do I expect to hear out of your mouth when you walk up? What I expect is, what are you doing? That's what I expect. That's how it works. Now I see you like in some kind of like cowboy costume. I'm just a little bit concerned about that.
First of all, it's not a costume. That would be like someone in the Marine Corps calling your dress blues a costume.
No, nice try, but we're not going to go. We're not that linkage. Sorry. That is not happening today.
It's there, man.
Oh, it's not. Trust me. All right. I know linkage, and there's no linkage. You in the cowboy hat? Come on.
Same type of culture, Max.
Just, okay.
The same principles that we believed as we thought were stacker, that we knew were sacrosanct in the Marine Corps, same principles in that community.
Okay. We're not gonna draw a parallel. Okay. We're not gonna draw a parallel. Okay. So, how's your day going so far?
Well, don't just drop that then and then say we're not gonna talk about it. But anyway.
We're not drawing that parallel. It's not, we're not doing that. All right. So, exactly. We're just not doing that. A lot of controversy yesterday about stopping power.
Good.
Are you happy?
You know how things get solved?
How?
You know how things get solved? And good argument. Good, mature argument.
You know, I will tell you, this is a personal opinion of mine. We don't do that very much in our country anymore. We're so busy screaming at it. We're so busy screaming at each other that we don't listen, and we don't have interesting discussions.
We need to have great discussions. Things. We look back at history. Just look at inventions, you know, and things like that. Some of the most important landmarks in human history. You know how they got to that point? Discussions. Not arguments. Good, solid discussion. And then compromise.
I interviewed a guy yesterday.
Yeah.
A historian. And I had him on the program, and we wound up, we started talking about Iwo Jima, and just because of the anniversary of both flag raisings yesterday. So we started talking about that. Then we started talking about current events. Is there a parallel between current American history? And he was very dire in the things that he said to me. And I said to him, I said, I just don't see you're giving me the reefer madness. Because what he said, he started talking about political rhetoric, and he said, you know, we've seen stuff like this. He said the Germans did it with Joseph.
Oh, God.
Okay, but no. This guy's a PhD.
right. Hitler.
This guy's a PhD.
The rise of the Third Reich.
This guy's a PhD, and I've known him for a long time. I've had him on my show, and so I'm listening to him, and then he said, mass deportations. That was, but so you can see this. So, but my thought, Mike, was going back to our original kind of line of discussion was, he's not a stupid guy, and this is what he hears.
No, but he's a liberal.
Hold on. This is what he hears, and so I asked him. I said, what is contributing to this? Because he said, you don't seem to be nearly as alarmed as I am about this. And so I said, well, look, when I look at the issues, hitting the pause button on immigration from certain countries so that we can refine the process we use to vet people that come from those countries, to me doesn't sound like it certainly doesn't sound like a ban, and it certainly doesn't sound like the end of the democracy to me. And so then he said, well, I said, okay, and he made a statement, and I said, where are you hearing that, though? Who's saying that? And so then he talked about the Affordable Care Act. And so, and it very
look at this hand, Matt. Yeah.
Very dire.
Don't
about
look
it.
Look at this hand. Look at this hand.
Right. And I said, okay, Al, I said, where are you getting that? Because what I hear is repeal, replace, make it better. But it's not easy. And then what I read, and what you're telling me, though, is 20 million people are going to be uninsured. Where are you seeing this? Because that's not what I'm seeing. And he said, and then the next thing that we talked about was there was one other issue. But, Mike, it's like, so informed, I would tell you, intelligent, smart people, it's just, and if you can't.
Matt,
if,
no.
Okay, hold on, and now you're going to start yelling, and you're going to invalidate the whole thing we talked.
No, I'm not going to start yelling.
If you can't engage and you can't have reasonable conversation, you can't get this thing to the middle. And we just don't have that much of it anymore.
Paper doesn't make you smart. You can have all the education in the world, Mac, but it doesn't make you smart.
Agreed.
It makes you it makes you an intellectual, but it doesn't make you smart. I've known intellectual people that are dumber than a box of rocks. When it comes to, 'cause you're right. The argument, and I have the same thing with family members. And it's like, where do you come up with this? And as soon as you ask for the facts, it's, don't be looking at this hand. Watch this hand. This is where the bunny's going to appear. Boop. And they change. No, I don't know. I want to have that discussion. I'm not getting emotional. I'm not the one screaming at the top of my lungs that this is now the beginning of the dawn of the Third Reich. It's like, come on, what in the world are we doing? Why, you're right, why can't we have a normal discussion with mature level-headedness, coolness, and listen to two sides? The problem is, the people you're describing, Mac, they don't give a shit about your side. They don't want your facts.
But,
how did it get there?
I disagree with you. The people that I know, okay, and the people that I tend to invite on, I think for the most part tend to be reasoned people. Now, but what I thought curious is, that's what he hears. And is it the echo chamber that of listening to CNN and the hysteria? Because I think you and I would say, well,
did he ever answer you?
That's not what I hear. Well, he said, well, clearly I'm more alarmed than you are about what I see. And I said, well.
But he never answered you.
Well, no, you're right. What happens is, when asked a footnote, who's saying this? Who's saying the mass deportation of 11 million people? Where have you heard that? then there is no answer, right? Because it hasn't been set.
Right.
So
it's what they perceive. It's perception is reality.
And we both know that's not true. That is, that's a statement that drives me crazy. Like, oh, you know what? You perceive.
It's got to be true, Matt.
No,
how,
it's not. No, because you know, you perceive
that thought process.
What's that?
How do they? You say perception is not reality.
No,
is it a false statement.
Perception is not reality.
Wait. But you're saying that's a false statement.
Yes.
I'm so confused right now. I don't even know what to say.
Okay, let me.
We lived in a world. We lived in an organization that was all about perception as reality.
I don't care. What you perceive and what is real are can be two completely separate things.
Mac, I'm with you. I think it's a bullshit statement, but I think it's thriving. It is true. I'm just like you, same train of thought. I think it's a bullshit statement. I think it's absolutely bullshit to say that. It's a cop out.
Yeah, to me.
It's the same. When you hear statement that says that complacency kills.
When you hear people say perception is reality, I just like, oh my god.
Yeah.
It's like when somebody says in a meeting, "Hey, I'm just an average guy." All right, shut up. If you were an average guy, you certainly wouldn't out yourself. All right, you think you're a smart guy, which is why you say I'm an average guy. Okay.
Yeah. You want everybody to know that you're the smart guy.
Right,
I got it.
Right.
Shut up.
Yeah, shut up.
Go
I
back
want to
in
hear.
Your Harrier.
Exactly. You,
get back in your jet.
Yeah, go away. Go away. I don't want to hear
anything
else that you have to say. Shut up, okay? So when a perception is reality. No, it's not. You perceive, okay, that or the Germans perceived that perceived Hitler was going to be long-term great for their country. All right? What was real? That guy was rotten from the get-go. So your perception of what is actually true or could be two vastly different things, and everybody can have their own take. So when I hear that, I just cringe.
I say that's not a very good drawn analogy, because if you're an average German living in Germany in the early 30s and you go through that depression period within the Germany where you have no job and everything else, and all of a sudden the government, you have jobs, the country starts thriving again, and you would associate, yeah, that he is good. There's no perception there, because perception is reality in that case.
No. It's perception isn't reality, because what was real in terms of his quote-unquote goodness was he was rotten at the core. Yet they didn't know it, right, because they only saw limited glimpses of it. But what was in fact real, right, was disconnected from their perception. So that's my whole point about perception. Perception, and I'll take it to Iraq. The things that the guys that we fought against allowed us to see colored our perception. It took you a while to learn that the only reason you're seeing that is because they want you to see that. They are coloring your perception of them and this wherever you happen to be. And they will use that perception to kill you. Okay? So don't believe anything you see. Don't believe anything you see, because your perception won't have anything to do with what's real here. So,
right.
And so to me, is perception what you know? Yes.
So
it,
how
is
how
it real? No.
Deriving this, how do they derive this point? My point is, Mac, you had an opportunity.
Okay, Mike, that's actually uncharacteristically a great question.
But you said that you. Most people you come on here are very reasonable thought kind of guys, blah, 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 okay?
Yes.
But here, like I said, my problem is, Mac, my family are not reasonable when it comes to this. They're fucking wacko. They are out. They'll inject their own reality. Remove the reality that's on the table and inject mine, and now that's the new norm.
Right. Okay, well, okay. Now, let me tell you, can I give you some advice that a friend of mine gave me?
Well, let me tell you what I do first.
When you argue, hey, when you argue with an idiot,
no,
who's the idiot?
I don't argue. I don't talk. They're the first ones to start bringing it up. And I just shut up. I just stop. Or I do the magic trick. Hey, let's talk about something else. Well, no, shut up. I don't want to talk about it. Because in the end, I don't want to end up beating your ass. Your blood. Don't make me want to kick your ass. That will upset me. You're going to put me in a corner where I have nothing better to do than just beat you up. And that's not a win either. But
no.
It's going to make me sure fam feel good.
It's not without merit. I agree with you. But again, I think the point is look, your perception, all right, is colored by what you quote unquote know, right? What you know
right.
is defined by your intake. So if you have a narrow intake valve and you don't bounce it off other people and you're not open to intellectual discourse,
that's a great analogy. I like that. I'm gonna use that.
Yeah, I mean it's a narrow look. You have
if your intake is a soda straw.
Exactly.
Then man,
no, it is what you get. But when you open up your intake, right, and then what do you have to do? You have to reconcile things. You have to reconcile things like, okay, well, how does what he's saying here match up with this? Or, you know, how does this match with this? And so to me, this whole object of discourse is going through footnotes. You know, I remember when I went through high school and most of college, I never read a footnote in my life. Now what do I find? The most important things, the things that document arguments and where the information truly is, it's in the footnotes.
Right.
And it's
exactly.
And so to me, it goes back to that whole, when you widen the funnel, you can't help but see contradictions. And when you see the
look at you today, man.
What?
Wow, I like this man.
Hey, don't go there with me, okay?
Three-syllable words all the time. Maybe some four.
Hey.
Lock in, brother.
Be careful. I'm telling you right now, you're dancing near the edge. Okay?
Come on.
I'm telling you. I'm warning you. But when you do, and then the question is, how do you reconcile? What do you do with the contradictions? What do you do with the contradictions when you see them and they say, you know, I read.
Yes, what?
A blood boiler today, right? The white flag of the Taliban today flies over the city of Marja.
Of where? Mosul?
Marja.
Oh, Marja.
And so when people tell you, like, yeah, there's a reason that we're going to Helmand and, you know, we need to do this, and you look at him and say, what sustains this? And they say, well, you know, the Afghans will be able to, we're going to unask this thing.
Right.
You're like, got it. All right, where are you headed today?
Oh, I got to meet some people real quick, but I'll talk to you more on Monday.
Okay, so on Monday, we're actually going to we need to do a little historical review over the change, the migration from the
evolution.
Right, the evolution of the sidearm.
Migration, it was evolutionary.
Okay. All right. So we're going to do a little gun talk on Monday. All right. Well, good luck. Have a good weekend.
All right, brother. Good talk, man. I like this one today.
All right. Hey, don't look through a straw, man. Use the big funnel.
Yeah.
Wide,
okay.
Wide intake, man. Wide intake.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Mike Musselman. Mike Musselman. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. I'm going to play some audio from Iwo Jima coming up next on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Listen up, employers. Veterans can be a great asset to your company or organization. Veterans have gained skills in leadership, teamwork, and performance under pressure. Veterans have received the very best training in their fields and are never afraid to tackle a tough situation to accomplish the mission. If you are looking to hire a veteran, the Department of Labor can help you make it happen. You hire a veteran today, you won't be sorry.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. It's 9:32 on a Friday. Email. Mac, that was actually above average. Your intellectual intake, not bad. Thank you. As my dad would say, the sun shines on a dog's ass every once in a while. So, they have it. All right, I want to play a little bit of audio. I've long been interested in Iwo Jima. I have probably, I don't know, a couple thousand images of the battle. And a long time ago, I heard General Zinni speak. 1989-1990, at the basic school, probably the spring of 1990, if I recall. And he came and gave a pitch that he that I should play this pitch on All Marine Radio. I need to do that. Anyway, one of the things Zinni says is, hey, if I could give you any advice about reading, he said, pick one battle and then get to know, read everything about it. Don't just read a little bit about a lot of battles. Pick a battle and then, he said, it doesn't matter what, because all battles have the same elements. There's logistical support. There's communication, there's medical, there's administration, there's staff work, there's line units, there's, you know, supporting units and the way they all do their things. He said, so pick one. But get to drill into it and get to know everything about it. So, I mean, I took it to heart. My name for General Zinni is the Burning Bush. Because he says a lot of things that are true. And so I take it to heart. So Zinni, Zinni, okay, so in my exploration of Iwo Jima, I start reading, and I read, and I read, and I read, and I get maps, and I look at footnotes, and I look at video, and I look at all this stuff, just trying to learn about, you know, the whole battle, the reconnaissance before. I mean, you talk about a bloody day, I want to say the day prior to D-Day. I mean, they ran all these LSTs at the beach, doing amphibious reconnaissance to see if, you know, the area off the beach had been mined. And they, you know, a lot of sailors died that day. And so, I mean, just so you learn all this stuff about it. And in the process of all of this, I ran across some audio. A friend, a guy I met when I was a lieutenant with 1-5, I met him at a party. He's a friend of a friend. He finds me years later in North Dakota when I'm living up there. And he says, hey, I've got a cassette that I want to bring up and give to you. And I'm like, what? I couldn't even remember the guy, like how I met him. And he's like, hey, Mac, don't you remember? Jerry Mowry is a buddy of mine. I'm like, oh, that's right. And so, anyway, they were roommates, and we all lived in San Clemente. So, he brings me this audio, and I'm going to play some of it for you right now. Okay? This is a reporter going ashore, right, doing play-by-play in 1945. So, listen to this.
Look over on this ridge. The Marines have paths cut up the side of it to the top where the Japs are entrenched.
Okay, hold on. This guy is... That's not what I wanted. So give me 1 second to find it. And I'll find the file. All right, I think this is it. Cross your fingers.
The Allied push toward Japan landed 30,000 U.S. Marines on the tiny island of Iwo Jima on February 19th.
This is a CBS compiled this, and this guy brings it to me. And so this is... this.
There are several of these amphibious landing craft coming in for landing with us at this time. As we told you in earlier broadcasts, the tanks that were landed earlier this morning were bogged down in soft sand.
Okay, so... this is this reporter going from ship moving to shore with one of the tank battalions of either the 4th, I believe it's the 4th Marine Division, all right, because there's audio later on from the 4th Marine Division tank battalion, and they're moving to shore.
And the problem has been to get those tanks operative.
And so you're going to hear, he does the whole narrative. It's crazy.
And get the beach in condition to receive other tanks. Not also be bogged down. There would be no point in loading them, or rather unloading them, if they couldn't operate once they were on the beach. Or perhaps some of that difficulty is being cleared up. We don't know. We can't say. However, from our position out here, we can look into the beach and still see some of those tanks from this morning standing around in what looks to be the same position. So perhaps they are still bogged down, and perhaps one of the first jobs of our tanks will be to go in and help free these tanks that were already ashore. We don't know just what sort of a reception we're going to have when we get in there, although we have a pretty good idea. We've been lying out here watching these other amphibious craft go into destroy their tanks. The result always has been the same. These artillery and mortars that are edging the beach there on the high spots of ground to the north and south ends of the beach lay down a rather effective screen. And as these ships moved in toward the beach, they drew quite a bit of fire. We've seen one or two of them come limping out. Won't say limping, but they came out showing battle scars. So that will probably be our reception. Incidentally, while it clouded up for a while this morning, the sun has come back out again. There are just a few scattered clouds in the sky, but not enough to make any difference with the visibility or the intensity of the sunlight.
All right, so this is probably noonish. Right, the landing starts early in the morning, right, as the sun comes up. The first tanks go at D hour plus maybe 3 hours or 4 hours when they get sent. And then this is the second wave of tanks going in. So the sun's peeking out on Iwo Jima. Again, February 19th, 1945.
So the weather is at least in the favor of the invaders this morning. We're passing almost alongside of that cruiser now. It's a couple of hundred yards off to our right. Can't see too well what happens off the left of our ship because from our point here on the superstructure, the conning tower, the control tower, is between us and that part of the beach. However, we can see very well the beach that we're going to land on. Getting farther away now from that screen of battleships out to our rear. After this, and you probably won't be able to hear those guns anymore. However, we're coming right up alongside of that cruiser now, just a couple hundred yards off our beam. It looks like it's a great pile of wrecked airplanes been blown over the side of that embankment, and we can see pieces of wings and fuselage lying there.
All right, so they're headed for the beach. There's a cruiser off to their starboard. That would be right side. Beam would be amidship. Got it? All right, for all you people unfamiliar with naval terminology. And then what they're looking at is airfield number one, Suribachi's on their left. Airfield number one is directly in front of them, and they're seeing aircraft that have been destroyed and pushed off to the side.
Passing the flags now that are marking the areas of the beach, and you can probably hear a lot more of those battle sounds. Anti-aircraft fire coming from the beach to our planes that are flying over. You can hear the sound of machine guns in the background. And you can doubtlessly hear the motors of these tanks still warming up, waiting to land. Waking up quite awake. We're making good speed in toward the beach. We've passed that cruiser quite a ways now. We can see its guns. It was lying broadside of the beach, and now we see its guns turned out at a right angle to its hull and pointing with what we hope is deadly accuracy toward the emplacements of these guns on the beach. We are told
told from intelligence reports earlier that along the edge of the beach, Blue Beach, we were going to find a couple of beached LSMs, Japanese LSMs, and a Japanese destroyer. Well, we can see that now. We're in close up and we can see those beached ships wrecked and lying up on the beach. They perhaps were victims of the previous bombardment of this island. And while we haven't seen any flashes, and don't misunderstand us, we don't want to see any coming out of there. It looks as though, well, most we can say is they are there.
That was the rumor that there were snipers in there, that there was guns in those ships, and so repeatedly an object of attention during the invasion.
And they don't look as though they have been damaged too badly. However, that naval gunfire is breaking all around. We're making a curve to the left now, down toward the southern end of the island, and we're going to come right alongside one of our destroyers in just a moment. Landing point has been designated as Yellow Beach 1. That particular spot has been chosen because right there's a way to get through these terraces we mentioned a while ago.
Yellow Beach, that's where Cal Humphreys is already ashore. So these tanks are going to put in at Yellow Beach 1. Cal Humphrey, part of, I want to say, 1st Battalion, 27th Marines, and he's already ashore fighting. Cal, who you heard yesterday here on All Marine Radio.
Take a look at that junk heap up on the top of the hill again. Yes, that's what it is, scores and scores of Japanese airplanes. That landing field must be right on the top of that mountain, and what looks like a bank up there seems to be where the dirt has been thrown away by bulldozers and other excavating machinery as this airstrip was being built. And these planes should have been brushed right off the top of it. There are huge columns of smoke and dirt, dust, being kicked up back there, which can be from nothing else than the bursting of these shells. You can obviously hear this gunfire going on all around us. Now we are now inside the screen of warships. There's no more warships between us and the beach. We look out to the stern of us now, and there are hundreds of craft flying out there.
Let me read you an email. Mac, are you kidding me? Where do you find this kind of stuff? Again, I'll go back to General Zinni. Pick out a battle and learn as much as you can, and you'll be surprised what you can find out about that battle. Amazing, isn't it? You can play-by-play of a ship-to-shore movement at Iwo Jima on D-Day. The email goes on. I have never heard anything like this. I've heard interviews, but play-by-play? You've got to be kidding me. This is awesome. Thank you. Nah, you know, look, I share this stuff. It's certainly not mine, but incredible stuff.
Touching the beach. Nothing except a few amphibious craft that are on the beach, disgorge their tanks, and some of these Amtraks and Higgins boats that have already let go their troops. They're still beached in there. We're trying to spot where those post bursts are coming from, but we can't see as yet. Not almost close enough to be our own guns, but they're not. They must be from that destroyer, which is lying just off our stern. As the water's being churned up quite a bit in between us and the beach, now with the bursting of these shells. Them tracks are churning back and forth with their loads of Marines, and we can see one. It looks like a tank burning in there on the shore. Burned down low in it. Our ship is turned around so we can't get a very good look at it right now. We'll turn our glasses and see. Oh, it's a jeep on the shore that has been hit. Well, we can't say any more than that. Looking through our glasses now, we're just a couple of hundred yards off the beach. We can see these Amtraks pull up along the beach and dozens of Marines around each one of them performing their various duties. Trying to free them, if possible, and get them back out to haul in more Marines. They also seem to be using their own guns. You can see those terraces now, and stretched along on the seaside of those terraces, the cover they offer is a line of Marines taking protection from those covers. There must be a group of Marines that just recently landed. You can see lots of wrecked material over there on the beach. And you can no doubt hear the bursting of these ships. Bursting.
worthy of using it now, he could. Tojo isn't going to get much use out of this honor from here on in.
Doing a little Tojo shit talking right there. Holy smokes.
Get a better look at that little fire we saw on the beach. It is indeed a Jeep that has been hit and burning. We're coming right alongside of... We're hoping that the members of Tank Company B that we left out were able to get along successfully. And we're as fortunate in getting away from that fire as we were. That's something we won't know until we can tune in on the radio and see if we can pick them up. There's one of our planes flying high above those artillery emplacements now. We've just seen anti-aircraft fire bursting all around him. However, it hasn't hit him at all. He's still flying safely. You can obviously hear in the background the sound of these naval guns throwing their shells in toward the beach. We have been told by Captain Seashore before he went ashore with his tank just now that the beach was under heavier fire than Saipan. That was his personal estimate. And I think when the records are in and the story is finally told, it'll be found that he is not too far from wrong. We're pulling quite a ways out now. We're a few hundred yards, perhaps a thousand yards off the beach. We're out as far as that, well, almost out of that cruiser we spotted on our way in. Those sounds you hear are of naval gunfire. Over to our left, there's a battleship. And when that thing lays down a salvo, boy, it really lays down a salvo. It reads its entire bulk in smoke from those huge guns.
How do you like that? Hey, when that thing lays out a salvo, it really lays out a salvo. Yeah, battleships, man. And so for this reporter, probably the first time he'd been on the business side of, you know, of seeing all these different things he's read about and heard about. Now he's seeing them on his way to shore on Iwo Jima, seeing a battleship shoot from the business side of it. That must have been amazing. I've seen them shoot out in the North Arabian Sea. They slewed all their guns to one side. Jim Webb was the Secretary of the Navy. He flew out to our aircraft carrier and then flew over to, I want to say it was the Missouri. I'm not sure, though. It could have been the New Jersey. And they shot for him. And it was, I'll tell you what, absolutely incredible. This wall of fire like you can't even imagine. And we were behind it on the USS Ranger watching it. It was incredible. I can't imagine what it would be like to be in front of it on your way to the beach and see those battleships fire. Amazing.
And then it reads a good portion of the island of smoke, too, when those shells hit.
Now, we'll see. I think that's... Now, there's a break in the audio.
At ease, this is Applejack.
Now, what this is this is an absolutely amazing little piece of audio of the 4th Tank Battalion, their tactical net, as they're ashore at Iwo Jima, right? So at ease, this is Applejack. Now, the reason this guy brought me this tape was I knew one of the company commanders. He winds up, he's from North Dakota. He winds up as the president of the University of North Dakota. His name's Tom Clifford. So at ease, this is Applejack, all A's, right? Tom Clifford's company is, his call sign is 8-Ball, A-I-G-H-T. And so you'll hear this, but I've never heard the recording of a tactical net from World War II in my life until I heard this. And it's the only one I'm sure there's probably others, but it's the only one I know of. This is them on the beach of Iwo Jima, the 4th Tank Battalion.
Over. And, deck, this is Dave.
Steve has problems communicating. He can hear people. They can't hear him. So bear with me, and you'll get to hear tactical transmissions from near airfield number one, trying to tell guys down on the beach what's going on and where they need to go to get off the beach in a lane that's already been proved.
Steve, over. All right,
So you heard him talk Clifford. Those are the first two companies of the 4th Tank Battalion that are already up near airfield number one. This is absolutely unbelievable. The ironic thing was I played this for Tom Clifford. I didn't tell him I had it. I had him on my radio show at the time, and I told him I wanted him to come out and talk about Iwo Jima. He comes out, and I play this for him, and the look on his face was incredible.
Hello, Deck. This is Steve. Do you receive me? Over. Hello, Tom. Do you receive me yet? Over. Hello, Deck. This is Steve. Over. Hello, Deck. This is Steve. Over. Hello, Deck. Hello, Steve. This is Dick. Over.
Does calm always suck or what? The answer, calm always sucks.
Dick, this is Steve. I can't seem to get through to you. I receive you, but I can't seem to put to you. Over.
Applejack, this is 8-Ball. Over.
Okay, now, the day I played this for Tom Clifford, who is 8-Ball, he's sitting there with a headset on, right? And he's a big man. Even in his 70s, he was a well-built guy, and he took care of himself. He played handball. He's a tough guy. But he had been on Guadalcanal, Saipan, and now on Iwo Jima. And so he's listening to this, and he hears that part. And I swear to God, his eyes glazed over, and he went someplace else. It was amazing.
Hello, Steve. This is Tom. Over. I just talked to Jumpa Joe, and he said that what he knows, they're supposed to be within 100 yards of the airstrip. Over.
We must be right around up here someplace, Steve. There isn't a hell of a lot of infantry here. You know where those poles are right on the edge of the airstrip, and we're not about 150 to 200 yards away from them. Over.
Roger, Tom. You say your 300s are not working at all. Can you contact any infantry? Over.
We try to come.
Roger, Tom.
Now, again, they're describing this situation. The 300s obviously are the grunts that are supposed to be up near the airfield that they're not seeing a whole lot of yet. So let me read you another email. Hey, Matt, first of all, thank you. I've never heard anything like this, and to think that this is going on February 19th, 1945, in the midst of that battle is absolutely mind-blowing. Thanks for sharing this. It sounds like incredible theater as we listen to it 72 years later. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. By the way, as a former communicator, calm doesn't always suck. It's just problematic sometimes. All right, more of this.
Able 3, this is Able 1. Over.
Hello, Steve. This is Dick. Over again, please. Go ahead, Dick. Over. Say, is that all fixed to begin? No, it has not, and I'm sure waiting on it here sitting in this hole. Over. Okay, Steve, will you get out of that hole? You know where the hell I've been up here. I need to come up here and put this track back on and fix this damn tank up. Sorry, over. Well, Steve, I tell you, it's starting to get out once, and they helped me back in here. There are small arms firing here. Roger, Dick. We have requested it several times now through battalion. The fire's been pretty heavy down here. A little skeptical on it, but I imagine they're sending her in now.
Hello, Tom. Come on in. This is Dick. Over.
When I asked him, I said, you've never heard this.
Yes, Secretary.
He said, no, I've never heard that. He said, not since that day. And they explained how they were told, you know, you may or may not land based on the naval gunfire that we've done with this island. You know, we expect the infantry guys to be able to go in and take care of it. Possibility you won't even land. So 3 hours into it, you know, Clifford, his company is one of the two companies that gets landed. I think of the battalion had four companies, and so they go ashore. And he said, we get ashore, we're trying to get off the beach. He said, trying to drive in that black sand was a nightmare. And then we had to find the lane that the engineers proved for us. So we finally found that. So you heard in the transmission, them talking about the sticks. Well, the sticks had obviously marked the lane. And then he talked about getting up on the airfield, and it was nice and flat. He said, so it was good for tank gunning. He said, but there was nobody to shoot at. And it goes back to Cal Marvin. Cal Marvin is another former Marine from Northwest Minnesota, creator of Marvin Windows, huge company, and a great piece of a community up there called War Road, Minnesota. And as I said, a former Marine. Anyway, Cal Humphrey said yesterday, you know, he said, it's like we're fighting ghosts. I know they're here because they're killing us, but I haven't seen one other than the ones we've seen in caves. I haven't seen a live Japanese soldier since we got here, and they'd been there for, I don't know, a week or so. And so that's what Clifford said. He said there was, you know, you were looking for something to shoot at, but everything was dug in, and you know, there was no targets to be had. You know, you'd watch tracers machine gun tracers, and you know, and you'd shoot at what they were if you could see something. He said, but it was such a nightmare trying to identify it, and then you didn't want to stick your head out of the tank for fear, you know, of getting it blown off. And he said, so that's the environment that we went in. Let me just play a little bit more of you here. We got a couple more minutes before I go. This is a news report. Again, this is all CBS audio. What I'm going to do is you'll hear this audio next week, and the last part of February marks the Iwo Jima campaign, and I have my own little fascination with it that I'm more than happy to share with you. But let me read you one more email. Mac, holy shit, that was crazy. Sitting here at work, I stopped what I was doing, kind of put my head down between my hands with my elbows on my desk and just listened with my headphones on. That was awesome. Going ashore with those guys, moving from ship to shore, and then listening to those guys describe what was going on at Airfield Number 1. Pretty cool. Thank you. Have a great weekend. P.S. I'm looking forward to grilling now that I know what I'm doing. Hey, let me just tell you what. I'll play the... you'll hear Kim Holmes talk about the best grilling tips you'll ever need in your life. The only ones you'll ever need in your life. So listen to them. I'm telling you, you'll be a champion. All right, my thanks in order of appearance this morning to the Allmarine Radio head chef, Kim Holmes. And then Matt Morgan. Matt Morgan going to debut on Monday a program called Crossroads. And so you'll hear that then. So Matt, again, he of the Unknown Flag Raiser of Iwo Jima, which you can see on the Smithsonian Channel. Awesome. If you haven't seen it, you need to check it out. But you know, I'll tell you what, Matt is, he loves the culture and story of the Marine Corps. I think like a lot of us. And the passion, the intensity, the humor, the irreverence, all of that, which makes the Marine Corps culture more than moderately amusing. So, Matt will debut Crossroads on Monday. Having said that, and then the Gunner, as always, we talked about perspective. Looking at life through a straw, man. So I would challenge all of us. Look at it with a funnel, be slow to anger, and be quick to footnote. Have a great weekend. All Marine Radio. On a Friday. Out.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.